Years ago, I lived in the UP up in the Keweenaw Peninsula,
Oh,
and
really?
as I toured around the UP looking for the right place, I remember passing through Grand Marais and thinking, this place is absolutely perfect, except how do you make a living?
Yes, exactly. You could open a restaurant.
You did that, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
In fact, I was reading your bio. It was at a diner that actually that determined your future in the UP, didn't it?
Pretty much, yeah, in a way. It played a hand.
I understand you met your husband that way.
Yeah, I came up to Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore camping with my sister in the summer of 1991, and one rainy day we ate at a little cafe on the main street in Grand Marais, and I ended up marrying the guy that owned the place and made my sandwich. So
I
he was
love
in a
that.
little rented building, and we were there. I was there with him for years, and then we found the diner car, hauled it up north, put it on our own property, and restored it.
West Bay Diner, is that right? The name?
Yep, that's
Yeah.
right.
And I'm wondering, because waiting tables and running a business and all of that takes so much time and energy. How do you write and do all of that?
I'm stubborn. I'm slow. Like, I worked on my first book, South of Superior, over the course of about 7 years. And, or my first published book, I should say.
Yeah.
And, always in Grand Marais, it's seasonal. You know, it's a tourist destination. It's a seasonal business. So in April and November, it gets very slow. So that first book that I published, a lot of it was written in Aprils and Novembers over the course of many years.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then after it was published, not only because of trying to write more seriously now that I was publishing, or I shouldn't say more seriously, but thinking I could devote more time to it, I was always super serious about it. And because I have a bad back, we quit doing the winters because we snowmobile commuted into the diner in the winter. It's busy with snowmobiling in the winter, and we live 20 miles from the diner, so it was a very rugged snowmobile commute. And between my wanting to devote more concentrated chunks of time to writing and my back that said, I can't do this commute on the snowmobile anymore, we started having the winters at home, which I had a pretty naive idea that that would just make everything perfect. I actually found it quite difficult to have large chunks of time because I wasn't used to it, and I was afraid. I was afraid of what would happen if I couldn't write another book. I struggled with that a bit. But at any rate, I worked on Tin Camp Road over a course of many years, too.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, that makes sense what you're saying. Now, you've also written books for middle schoolers. Would that be the right age range? A couple
Yeah,
of
they're called
those?
middle grade, and the publisher says they're, you know, about eight and up. And in the diner, we always say 8 to 108.
Oh, absolutely. I read books of that age group as well with great enjoyment.
Yeah.
So, how does that differ? How do you make that choice that I'm going to write for a younger reader now? And is it any different in the writing process for you?
I guess in a way it really, I would say no, not really. I just try to follow the voice of the character where it leads me. My first middle grade novel is called Prairie Evers, and Prairie is the main character. She is such a character, and she just appeared in my head one night talking. She had a lot to say. She was really she's feisty, and she's great. Writing that book was probably the most effortless writing I ever did. And in a way, I wrote it really quickly. I wrote the first draft within a matter of weeks on that one. And I did then work on it for years after that. But that first draft, when I look back on it, it contains almost all the elements of the finished book. And I didn't think of it as writing for kids or writing for adults. I was simply trying to follow Prairie's voice wherever it led me. And that was a book that I actually wrote before South of Superior or any of the other books were published or dreamed of. After South of Superior came out, my agent was curious to see what else I might have written. And so I sent her a whole bunch of stuff, and most of it she was like, yeah, that's nice, next. But Prairie Evers grabbed her and her assistant's interest, And so they were the ones who suggested I pull it back out and continue to work on it. And I was thrilled because I had always had a real special feeling about that book. But in terms of the writing, I really try hard to put myself and then hopefully the reader right in the shoes and experience of whatever character has the scene. And so whether they're 10 or 90, I just strive to look at the world through their eyes.
I suppose that may answer the question I was going to ask you, but maybe not. I was wondering if you write from an outline or you have a character in your mind and they kind of write the book and you just follow along and transcribe it.
It kind of both and neither. I mean, it sounds so reassuring to have an outline, and I don't typically work that way. And sometimes I think I'm probably the most inefficient writer who ever lived. I seem to circle sometimes around and around and around a story. Like a character might occur to me, but I don't really know what their story is. And it can take a long time to discover that. Or sometimes, as with Prairie, they just march in, and that's like magic. But it doesn't happen all the time for sure.
Yeah.
I do try anymore before I really start writing a book, and it helps, but it doesn't solve all the problems, to have a sort of a super loose outline. I always draw a W, like I draw a W on paper, and the points of the W are kind of the main plot points. And things shift around and change, but if I have a general idea of what I feel the main plot points are,
mm-hmm.
It helps to write. It helps to keep the story going. I'm writing toward something. And sometimes they're unlikely. I mean, like, if I ever get it written, I'm working on something now where one of the plot points, if you looked at it, the top of the W would say blue stain, and the bottom of the first point would say free goat. I'm like, what the heck am I going to do with a blue stain and a free goat?
Oh, I love it.
But they keep showing up that way, so I'm probably going to have to try.
So what's the W for Tin Camp Road? That's the new book on the market right now. Tell us about this book, a synopsis, introduce us to Laurel and Skye.
Well, Laurel is a single mom. She's a hardworking single mom with a patchwork of jobs. She cleans motel rooms and chops firewood. She ends up helping out at a bed and breakfast, and she's trying to do her very best by her daughter, Skye, who's 10, and who is super smart and creative. Skye is just great. She's such an easy character to write. Like Prairie, she came easy. I seem to find 10-year-olds a magic age. So Skye and Laurel are looking for a home, and Laurel she's a dreamer, but she's a hard worker, and she has really, really big aspirations for her daughter, not in terms of outward success, but that she be super creative and super capable and confident, and that she has the best of all that life has to offer on a really fundamental scale, that she lives, that she's full of spirit and soul. And that's not always so easy to pull off. And her resources are limited, and she doubts herself a lot. So the story follows their journey through some challenges and some decisions of Laurel's that are tough decisions, and where they right or wrong, the story asks you to wonder that yourself.
You take on the issues of homelessness, I think specifically for single moms and children, the working poor, good parenting. Maybe delve into those a little bit.
I think that I have had the honor of knowing a lot of great parents in my life up here who are maybe not very well off and struggle to make ends meet, and they at the same time are raising these amazing children. So I love that, and I want to honor it. I think that good parenting is so important for the world, because good parenting is what creates little humans, right?
Mm.
The next little batch of us, and a big batch of us. And I think that good parenting is hard, and it's a mystery, and it's challenging, and everyone is always going to question a lot of their own decisions, no matter what their resources are. But I think if you're a poorer parent, you might start to doubt yourself a lot all the time. I'm not sure that our society places much value on things that don't cost money.
Yeah.
But I do think that it doesn't always take a huge amount of resources to be a fantastic parent. that you can foster creativity and capability from ground zero with the basics and with an appreciation of the natural world and other humans. So that's what I wanted to watch Laurel struggle to do in this book. And I think that, I'm not sure, I mean, I use the term the working poor a lot. I've been that for most of my adult life myself. So I'm not sure it's a great term, but it's the term I use. But I think a lot of people don't see the working poor. They don't see the service classes. And when you have a lot of resources, maybe you don't have a window into a world that is every bit as complex, full of nuance and big dreams and big mistakes and big successes and big philosophical questions as anyone else's. I kind of wanted to try to show the complexity of this character, Laurel, who's really a philosopher.
Yeah.
At heart. She's trying to figure out the big questions. And I think most of us do that no matter what our station in life, so to speak, is. And I think it's so easy to lose everything when you live at the edge. And when you live on the edge, you get so used to living there and walking along it, you don't even feel it as an edge anymore. But it's still a very risky place to be.
Laurel actually loses Skye at one point. And, you know, debatable that she's at fault in any way of that. But that gives an interesting window, too, into how that part of the government can work to take our children away because of a mistake that we've made.
Yeah, and it is debatable. Did Laurel, is it her fault? Maybe it is. It's an understandable decision, hopefully, within the context of the story that she makes. She's kind of in an impossible position.
Yeah.
I end up, as a writer and as a person, I have so much sympathy on so many sides. I know that, for instance, in the story that the foster, or the family services worker who's involved, she's just doing her best, too, and she sees terrible things happen to children.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know who Laurel is. You know, it's her job to make sure Skye's all right. Yeah, it's just tough. It's really tough. Everybody maybe wants to have the family's best interest in mind or the child's, but until you know people, and even after you do, who can really say what that is for sure? I think the book asks a lot of questions. It doesn't provide all the answers. I don't think a good book can provide the answers necessarily. It can just ask us to ask the questions.
And she being Laurel, makes some great efforts at something you alluded to before, in showing Skye the world without having those material resources. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about how she does that.
Laurel is very brave, despite being timid. I think Laurel's quite timid in a lot of ways outside of her comfort zone. But she's so intent on having Skye be full of wonder that she encourages her in her art. Skye is an artist. She's always pointing out the beauty of the natural world to her and making sure that they live in it. She goes completely outside of her comfort zone to let Skye, like, take a big trip out west with a more well-off woman who wants to take Skye under her wing. And that's very hard. It's hard for Laurel to let her go.
Yeah.
But because she thinks this is a great opportunity for her, she does. And then she has that to deal with the feelings afterwards of, like, it makes her feel more diminished, but she's at the same time really happy that Skye is having these adventures and being in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and meeting all kinds of people and seeing all kinds of sights.
I think that's kind of a moment of showing of what a wonderful parent she really is. Because,
yes,
like you said, it really is hard to let go and have someone treat your child to things that you can't afford, you can't do for them.
Really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And I think that does show, I think it's a very telling that she does that, because she's really putting Skye first.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it hurts, it scares her and it makes her feel less capable than ever.
And talk about the part that place fills in this novel in terms of the UP. I think the climate, the snows, all of that play a big part here. And also place in the term of home, because Laurel keeps moving from home to home, trying to create that safe nest for her daughter.
Laurel, like I love the UP. not easy to make it here, so it was very, very easy for me to transfer that love of place into a character. I think place has so much of a role in shaping who we are, especially if we pay attention to it. So place up here, it's wonderful and terrible. You know, I personally love the winters, but they definitely school you when they're rough, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be cold. It's going to be a lot of snow. It's going to limit how you can move around. It's going to limit your income. It's just going to show you who's boss. And that's not all bad, but it's not easy, that's for sure. If you appreciate it, the remoteness can be stunning. Or it can be incredibly lonely and isolating, or it can be both. And for Laurel, places, her family, in the story, her family has been in place in this fictional tiny town of Galleon on Lake Superior for generations. They came from Finland, and her whole sense of identity is wrapped up in being a hill from Galleon. She doesn't know for sure that she could be anyone anywhere else. In fact, her own mother moved them around a lot. She lived downstate a lot, and they moved from place to place, and she never felt like anything of any worth except for at home in Galleon, where her people were from for generations. So it asks a kind of a paradoxical question. If everything you need is within you, which this place gives her that feeling, then why is it so scary to be anywhere else? And that's a question I wrestle with a lot myself. I love it here. I feel best here, I guess I would say. And I've often wondered, if I had to leave, would I be able to be me?
Yeah.
And that's a question that Laurel wrestles with too. So I want the story to build her confidence and ability at the same time as I want to admit there's something very special about this place. And can we be ourselves away from it? Why do we have to be?
I've always thought that one of the most intimidating things about taking on a writing project like this is that if you're going to do it right, if you're going to do it in a way that's going to touch your reader and move them, you have to immerse yourself as a writer into that character and feel what they feel and see what they see and really fully experience what they experience. What is that like for you?
It's emotional. I do. I spend so much, like I did spend, as I said, like 7 years with this project. And it took me a long time to get to know Laurel. I was just kind of getting to know her around her outer edges. She's actually probably a pretty self-protected character. Characters over time become to seem like real spirits to me. And very, very slowly they take over their own stories. So when I refer to her as this and that, as if I didn't write her, it's because it comes to seem as she is someone I got to know super slowly. And then I tried to share her story. It took me a long time to get to know her. She's not so easy to get to know.
Mm.
But once I did try, just as you said, very insightfully, to completely immerse myself in her experience. And it's scary. It's emotional. I try to let myself feel what she would be feeling. And so it takes a lot out of you. I really want the reader to connect emotionally to her quandary and to whatever will happen to her in Sky. And so I put myself through all that, and yeah, it's just emotional.
Yeah.
I definitely feel it as I write it.
You have an event coming up in Kalamazoo on Sunday, September 19 at BookBug. This is a bookstore here, and it'll be a conversation with Bonnie Jo Campbell, one of our beloved authors here in this area, and far beyond this area.
So excited and looking forward to it, and honored to have a chance to be in conversation with her. She's awesome.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that event? What will the conversation center around?
You know what? I don't know.
There you go.
I think we'll discover it as it happens. I'm excited to come. Bonnie Jo and I haven't really discussed it too much yet, and in a way I hope it's off the cuff and spontaneous.
Those are the best.
See where it leads us.
Yeah. How did you meet Bonnie Jo?
Oh, gosh. That's a really good question. Probably I met her at book events for South of Superior, but I had been aware of her and her writing for quite a while before that. It's very exciting to meet her because I really, really admire her work and think a lot of her as a person, too.
I think there are some similarities in your novels. I've read her work. I've read yours.
Well, I would love to think that because I really admire her work. Thank you. She confronts a lot of issues facing poor women or poor, you know,
yeah.
especially women, especially maybe poor women. And she faces stuff head on, and she's a really great writer.
Well, that's where I think I see some of the similarities, these strong women under difficult circumstances and how they come through, the quiet superheroes in our society that we may not notice. Well, thank you for giving us some of your time today, Ellen, and we'll let you get back to the diner.
Thanks for calling. It's great to talk to you.